What do you think the biggest training mistakes people make when dieting are?
Biggest training mistakes? I think there are probably two big ones depending on what context they're coming from. One of them, and I don't know how prevalent this is anymore. It certainly was back in the 80s. It goes back to, if you go back to the 80s, like contest prep dieting, there was this idea, you know, to switch your training and go to high reps and lighter weights and burn in the cuts and etch in the striations, or maybe it was etch in the cuts and burn in the striations. I don't remember. But basically they would all ramp their volumes up during contest dieting, but go to higher reps, short rest periods. Now, it worked for the pros because that was when they at least claimed to be bringing the steroids in. Now, I don't know if that's true. They've always claimed that was the case, that they stayed off most of the year and only went on when they started dieting. I don't know. A lot of them also, in my opinion, did that instead of cardio. Like they were using high volume weight training to burn calories. Because as we know, weight training is free. Except that it's
I don't know if it was in that language, but
something to that effect. The problem is for naturals, if you do that, you hemorrhage muscle. Period. Because I knew guys that did it. If you switch your training and go lighter for higher reps, you lose muscle. Period. As a natural. You don't have the drugs to protect it. Now, I don't know if that idea really exists anymore. It certainly did. I mean, it probably does. But when you are dieting, you must stay heavy. Because tension is what builds muscle. And tension is what maintains muscle. As soon as you lower the tension requirements, you will lose muscle. Period. And so that, like I said, I don't know how common that one is anymore. But that ties into the other one, which is there is this idea. And again, I think we need to distinguish between gen pop and like physique and athletes. Because gen pop's not exposed to this stupid as much. Mm-hmm. But there's this idea that when you are dieting, you should increase your training volume. Which again, works on drugs. Especially if you train like a pansy. Sorry, if you train light with high reps. I hate the drug. Maybe you can get away with that. But there are still, I've seen this stated. What builds muscle maintains muscle. Well, that's true, but it goes to the volume that builds muscle maintains muscle. And that's factually wrong. We know that you can maintain muscle mass on a huge reduction in volume. That was the big discovery 2 years ago, right? Vince was like, huh, you can maintain muscle on really a lot lower volumes than we thought. Gee, really? In that 2002. Now they will counter, but those studies weren't done during dieting. I don't give a shit. That's a hand wave. What changes? Why would you need more volume when you're dieting and your recovery is lower? Explain the logic of that to me. They're just like, the studies weren't done when they were dieting. Ergo, LOL wild. All right, fine. Which is why every physique competitor ends up broken off, overtrained with joint injuries during prep. Period. Because not only do they not reduce their volume, like they should, eventually, and I'll come back to that, but they think they should increase it. That's with adding cardio. That's with cutting their calories. How in the absolute hell can you justify doing more when your recovery is down? Explain the logic of that to me. There is none. Not to mention the reality. The impact of weight training on fat loss is minimal. Period. It just is. It doesn't burn a lot of calories unless you do too much of it. If you're doing too much of it, you're not training intensely enough. Period. Yeah, indirectly, you can deplete muscle glycogen. That's part of UD2. Look like Larry. Mike has no tan on my website. Right? That is part of that system, but it's also got too heavy workouts for a reason. Right? There could be an indirect effect. And I wrote an article on my website years ago, weight training for fat loss. And I said, if you're going to pick one or the other, pick heavy. You must stay heavy. If you want to add a couple of high rep sets to deplete muscle glycogen, which enhances whole body fat oxidation, that's okay. But only if you reduce the volume of the heavy one. You can't throw it on top because you blow up and every physique competitor blows up. Larry talked about that when we discussed it with him. Nobody in his gym, they were blown, like the volumes he was doing coming into the tail stages of his diet, they didn't believe it. Because on UD2, you're doing a short full body workout of like 2 to 3 heavy sets. I ended up doing that every third day. Didn't lose any muscle, didn't lose any strength, because he was able to go give it his all. If you're tired and exhausted from contest dieting, you're like, oh God, I got to go do 10 sets for chest. You're going to pace yourself. If you know you've only got 3, you're going to go hard.
Yeah.
He lost no muscle. He had no joint pain. He never got, because weight training doesn't burn enough calories. You are better off replacing weight training with low intensity cardio or just diet properly, which we talked about during the RFL podcast, and we're going to prove next year will work. Because I know other coaches that do it exactly the way I would do it. They don't even need a lot of cardio. And they use low-volume, low-frequency weight training. And their people come in better looking than they did doing this high-volume, endless cardio, moderate deficit BS. But the industry isn't ready to hear that yet. Which is fine. Makes it easier for me and these other coaches to prep their people. Like, as gross, like to a degree, I'm okay if my athletes' competitors are being given bad advice. Makes it easier for us to win. It's a shitty way of looking at it.
Not jinx it.
But it's true. Whatever. They're never going to listen. This is so entrenched in the lore. They're lifting 6 days a week. They're doing cardio every day and they're on low calories. And they're wondering why they're exhausted all the time. You cannot do more on that. Now, if you're starting a long diet, whether it's contest prep or otherwise, and you're not using a big deficit, and you want to keep your volume of in the weight room up during that time, that's fine, right? I won't, you know, I tend to, since I often gravitate towards bigger deficits for a lot of people, it's more important when calories are much lower to use low volumes, right? Rapid fat loss, Mike has no TAM, my website, Rapid Fat Loss Handbook, very low volume resistance training, because that's all that's required for maintenance. I would rather someone get 2 or 3 heavy sets and maintain weight on the bar, maintain tension within the muscle, than piss about for 10 sets. Also, you just don't have the energy to sustain it in that type of system. There are ways around that if you can't reduce your volume. People go listen to that podcast. That's not the topic here. So that's really the big thing, right? Or there's also, this isn't so much a thing like it was in the 2000s. Guys, you can't do interval training every day. You can't. You couldn't do it in the 2000s. You can't do it now. I don't think that's a thing anymore. We've come back around to now low intensity cardio is okay. In the 2000s, they were like, not effective. And it made you fat somehow. Intervals, intervals, intervals. And everybody blew up. They were lifting 5 days a week. They were in intervals 5 times a week on low calories, on low carbs. And they all blew up. Just like I said, they would.
Like their joints.
Yeah, they just overtrained. You can't handle that much high intensity training. I'm like, and I pointed out, I'm like, look, most elite athletes don't do intervals more than twice a week. Why do you think you're better than them? On a diet, and they don't do it on a diet either. No answer. And everybody got wrecked.
Yeah.
Then there were people who tried to do like track sprinting. They just ended up with pulled hamstrings because they were all stupid. But we're right.
So for those running themselves into the ground, you would advise, hey, lower the training volume, both in the weight room and on the Stepmaster.
Well, the cardio thing is more complicated than that, right? So there was this opposite argument in the 2000s that, again, needs more contextual nuance. And it still exists now, right? Because here's how you approach contest prep. 2 hours of cardio day, low calories until you either manage a stage or crack. And most people crack. Then the early data on like women, and menstrual cycle dysfunction and low energy availability started to break. And there was this idea that you should never go below the energy availability threshold. Great advice, but you will never get to stage without crossing that line. And the whole thing about cardio, there is an idea that you will come across. Oh, if you're doing 2 hours of cardio a day, you're doing it wrong. Well, context. If I'm coaching a smaller female who's 115 pounds, 50 kilos roughly, I can only take her calories so low before, we can do RFL, and that's the biggest deficit she can, as the body adapts, as energy expended, you have to maintain the deficit somehow. And in some cases, that may mean that amount of cardio. Now, that doesn't mean you should start prep with that amount of cardio. That's where I think people got the wrong idea. You had people that from day one, 2 hours of cardio, 1 hour morning and evening, cut their calories hard, intensive weight training, and that screwed them. That would wreck them. The key is that you build it up from a low level as needed, right? Because there is the alternate idea, and I agree with this. Do as little cardio as you need to get to goal, which is at least a little bit more nuanced. If you need more to maintain the deficit, to keep things moving, increase. If you don't need it, don't do it simply because that's what's always been done. And that's kind of what came out of that. Right? Like, yeah, again, as you get leaner, as total daily energy expenditure comes down, as all the adaptations occur, you have to sustain the deficit, especially when you're on a schedule, right? You cannot get behind. That may, and you've only got two things to manipulate. Well, you got three things to manipulate, technically. You increase cardio or NEAT if you've got that option, which may be falling if you're not tracking it. You can cut calories only so far, or you can use what Johnny Shreve hilariously referred to as a cheat code and add drugs. Right? If you got CLEN and T3 or DNP, if you've got the balls, you don't have to do any of that because you can just add more to raise energy expenditure. But if you're talking about coaching a natural who's much smaller, you've got to sustain the deficit some. And it's funny, you look back at the 80s, right? Where people, bodybuilders would intuitively diet for their prep, and as much as anything is intuitive, it was just a rule set. Before we science the crap out of it, every couple of weeks, they would either cut their calories by 100, usually by switching out starchy carbs for fibrous carbs. That was the big trick. Like, people didn't talk about calories, really. It was very much by feel and by what it meant. Or they'd like add 10 minutes of cardio a day every couple of weeks. And years ago, I wrote this really, really tedious article looking at the amount of metabolic adaptation, the decrease in daily energy expenditure, to fat loss at different body fat percentages based on admittedly limited data. And what I found was that if you're lean, by which for men sub 15%, for women sub 22 or so, every 2 pounds of fat loss is about 100 calories. That's what these bodybuilders in the 80s were doing. Every couple of weeks, they would increase their activity by about 50 to 100. They would decrease their food intake. And that way they could just keep the deficit and maintain, sustain fat loss into stage. So they were doing it by feel. We just do it a little bit more technically now. So yeah, if you have to increase your cardio to maintain the goal fat loss, then you have to. How much you end up doing will depend. It's not a matter of X amount is right or wrong. Just don't start there. Just don't start with 2 hours a day and 1,200 calories because that wrecks people. So summing up, don't increase your weight training volume. If you're on a moderate deficit, you can sustain it for a while. But again, as competitor, again, now I'm talking about physique prep. I'm talking about diving to the extremes, not Gen Pop. Gen Pop is not training 6 days a week in the first place, right? Different groups. As you get closer to show, you need to reduce your weight training further. Now people will go, but you're burning less calories. Yeah, a little. Replace it with cardio. Walking on the treadmill will not exhaust you. Trying to grind out more sets of leg press will, when your joints are already aching and you're dehydrated and you're overtrained. Because what do physique competitors report? They come out of their show and they're just broken for a month and they can't train worth a damn because they wrecked themselves by systematically overtraining into show. So even if you start a moderate contest prep diet, as you get deeper into it, you must reduce your resistance training while maintaining the quality, by which I mean intensity, by which I mean weight on the bar. If you're having to reduce weight on the bar, nobody's going to maintain 100%. Also, certain exercises are more likely to fall off than others. Squats, bench press is notorious.
Especially bench, yeah.
For cratering.
Overhead press.
With weight loss.
Yeah.
Right? But machines generally are not. right? So if you're doing a combination and you go in and your squat poundages are way, it's leverages, you're dehydrated, it changes your center of gravity, like all that changes. But you get on a leg press, I guarantee you can grind out the same way. Your strength will not be down. And if you lose a couple reps here and there, that's pretty normal. But let's use machines. And as long as your strength is being maintained, you're not losing muscle.
Yep.
And you're better off doing two or three heavy sets, keeping the weight on the bar, than trying to piss ass your way through 10.
Yeah. So as to your advice to maintain the weight on the bar, preserve intensity in your words, one thing people find when they lower their volumes is that, at least at first, they can express their strength a lot better, since lowering the volume almost functions as like a powerlifting peak. Would you caution people against the temptation to chase PRs during a diet?
Yeah, I would.
Or would you say that's fine? You would?
I mean, whatever. I don't think it's necessary. And like, again, you know, you have to remember that recovery will be down on a diet of any deficit. And it'll be down more on a bigger deficit. Like, if you produce more, if you're going to do something like RFL. So the goal is not, people do the same thing on my specialization cycles, which you're not going to talk about. When they cut the volume on the other muscle, the maintenance muscle groups, they're like, I'm able to make PRs. Should I? I go, no, because that's not what the word maintenance means.
Yeah.
Just maintain weight.
It's
on
in the name. Yes.
Maintenance. It's right there in the name. Yes, exactly. Yeah. So no, you shouldn't. Because that could be extra fatiguing for reasons. Just your goal should be to maintain the weight for reps on the bar. Nothing more, nothing less. If you're down a couple reps on any given day, whatever, it happens. But in the aggregate, and look, coming, like, again, this is, we're talking about physique competitors coming in at the extremes. In the last couple weeks, things go wrong. Like, there's just only so much but whatever. This is the last couple weeks. Chris Beardsley's nonsense notwithstanding, you don't lose muscle within a week. Like, you're still, do your best, but you are not probably going to be heaving up your best weights.
Yeah, and I like that you bring up context. For sure. When we're talking about physique competitors, probably a good idea not to chase PRs like crazy. When we're talking about people who are already really well-trained, strong, they can push it. But if we're talking about a novice lifter doing RFL, someone who can still make reasonably fast progress in the weight room even while dieting. Yeah, if like the weight is feeling really, really light, add a little weight to the bar.
And a lot of them are going to be maybe coming into it without a weight training background. If they're just starting, absolutely, because it's mostly neurological at that point. And they're not, at that point, they don't have the ability to push hard enough for it to matter, right? And that's, if you look at my beginner weight training routines, it's 2 days a week of low volume weight training anyway. It's what the trained people should be doing. It's just starting from scratch. So absolutely they can build up. And you may even see a case, they may even gain a little bit of muscle even under those conditions. Endless studies show that. But so it is context dependent. So but if we're talking about somebody who's trained, someone who's going, who is on the leaner side, trying to go to much leaner, like, look, if you're a dude at 15% and you want to get to 8, you cannot just keep pushing the volume of weight training while you diet yourself into hormonal oblivion.
So if you're benching 100 kilos for 5x5 before starting the diet, you don't want to be pushing for 102.5 kilos for two sets of five the next week, and then 105, now, then 107.5, and so
now
on.
A question that does come up, and this is worth addressing, is, let's say you're doing 100 kilos by 5x5 start of the diet. Will 100 kilos by 3 be a sufficient maintenance? Like, yes. 90
kilos. When you say by 3, do you mean?
Say 3 sets of 3.
Right, as opposed to 5 sets of 5.
Right. So let's say you can't get 5 reps anymore.
Yeah.
Will 100 kilos, the same weight on the bar, for lower repetitions, still be a maintenance stimulus? And I think the answer is probably yes. So let's say you've got two options, right? And I'm going to come back and give an example that does come from steroid use, stolen from Dan Duchesne. Let's say pre-diet, you're going 100 kilos by 5x5. Your strength starts to fall off. Which is going to be better for maintaining performance or muscle mass? 100 kilos by 3x3 or 90 kilos by 5x5? In one case, you've maintained load on the bar and reduced volume. In the other, you've lowered the load weight on the bar and maintained volume. I can say without question, 100 kilos by 3x3 will be superior to 90 by 5x5. Period.
Right.
The volume will not make up. And all the studies on detraining and maintenance and peaking for 20 years, they'll look at work by Inigo Mujica. He's done all this work. He's got a whole book on it. But literally, it's a 200-page book that can be summarized as you can cut volume and frequency by 2/3 as long as you maintain intensity. That's his entire book. It's just a really tedious, the tediously long book to say literally that one thing. So you are better. So back in the day when guys actually used to come off steroids, which they don't anymore, PCT is just a lower dose these days. People don't come off, by and large. There was a big concern. How do you maintain muscle mass? Right? All that stuff. And again, not my area other than what I, you know, PCT and Clomid and HCG and all this stuff, because guys would go from feeling like gods, their muscle mass would just fall off. Because their testosterone would be castrate for 6 to 8 weeks. And Duchenne worried about this a lot. And he came up with the following, which is genius, because he was. He said, look, when you're on enough drugs, you will grow no matter what you do. High reps, low, it doesn't matter. What he recommended, he said, when you're on, get strong in higher repetition ranges. So let's say you've got a guy and he can bend up to benching 150 kilos for 20 reps when he's on. When he comes off, he might, let me back up. Let's say when he's on, he's heavy, low reps, 150 kilos for 5. When he comes off, he won't get 150 kilos for 1. He might have to cut the weight back to 100 and he'll lose muscle. Whereas if he works up where he's doing 150 kilos for 20 reps, when he comes off, he might squeeze out 150 kilos by 3 to 5 reps. And by maintaining that tension, even on the lowered volume, he'll lose less muscle. Same thing here.
If would it therefore hold that for like natural lifters, you should predominantly train with high reps in the off season?
No, not at all, because you're not going to see that kind of drop off when it, absolutely not. That's not what I'm saying, because steroids are going
maybe to for enhanced lifters though.
No, that's exactly, but that's what you're talking about, is enhanced lifters who want to come off. This doesn't hold for naturals at all, because the natural.
Yeah, cool. Glad I asked that question.
Yeah. So, but my point, the reason I brought up that example is his whole point was, so long as you maintain the tension in the muscle, which means weight on the bar, which is a proxy for muscular tension, you will maintain more muscle than if you reduce the weight. He was just looking at it within the context of coming off of drugs. I'm looking at it within the context of if you must make a choice between reducing your bench press reps per set at the same weight or weight for the same reps, you're better off reducing the reps per set. And actually going to that, when I was coaching Sumi before she retired, she would have these occasional blocks where we had a lot of time before a meet, and I would be upping her hypertrophy volume slightly, which meant I had to reduce her main lift volume. I reduced the number, total number of heavy reps and sets, but it didn't reduce the weight. So rather than doing good mornings up to heavy 3x3, I went up to one heavy set of 3, but at the weight she was using during her main cycle. I would have her at least do one or two singles at her heaviest weight of the previous cycle, rather than 8 singles at that weight.
Yeah.
It was more important. I wanted to make sure and keep the weight the same, and her strength never fell off. We would maintain the weight with a massively reduced volume, and that maintained her strength till I could drop the hypertrophy volume and we could get her back into main training. So same thing. Intensity is the key to maintenance of strength and or muscle mass. Volume is secondary. And people still get
and that. Intensity being the weight on the bar primarily, rather than proximity to failure.
Oh God. Yes and no, but it's going to be essentially the same thing. Like I said, if your reps drop off, if they're dropping off a ton, you may have a problem. Like if you've been doing, 100 kilos by 8 and now you're doing 100 kilos by 2, you probably, there's a problem in terms of your recovery. You may be losing muscle. But if you're down 2 reps, whatever, in a given day, so be it. That's not losing anything.
Yeah, it might bounce back next session.
And that bench example, we're talking about losing two reps. We're talking about going from 5x5 to 3x3, not from 2x15 to 3x3. Those are big, those are big. And again, barbell, big barbell work, big compound movements are completely different in this regard. Squat poundages, deadlift. I mean, deadlift poundages, think about it. Your leverages are as important, like your actual body weight, body mass, center of gravity is critical for a deadlift. Not so much for a hammer chest press.
Yeah.
Even like part of the reason people tend to think bench press falls, it's a leverages thing, right? Like you've got less water in your chest, like you actually lose mechanically. If you're a little bit leaner, you've got a longer range of motion. When you lose back fat or chest fat, the bar has to move a longer range. Mm-hmm. Bench press is notorious for cratering on a diet or with weight loss or dehydration. And it's a let, but chest press, no, you won't lose anything. Because you have the coordination and the leverages and all the other biomechanical stuff. So, like I said, if you're doing squats followed up by a couple sets of hack squats, as long as your hacks are maintained, it doesn't matter what the squats are doing. Honestly, screw the squats. Just stop doing them in prep anyway. Because when your joints get achy, you're going to have problems maintaining them anyway. So just move to machines. Yeah.
Yes, I think it wouldn't be fair to say that most people misunderstand the goal of training while losing fat. Everyone knows the goal is to preserve muscle. It's just how to reach that goal where misunderstandings arise.
Well, I think there's that, but I think it's also like what the goal of the training should be during the diet. And it is like this idea of like, oh, well, maintain your weight training volume. But why? You're not going to be gaining muscle in a cut. So why are you using what the Russians used to call stimulating loads? Why are you using volumes that are an attempt to stimulate growth when you're not going to get it? The goal should be to maximize the fat loss. You wouldn't do yoga on a cut because it's not going to get you to your goal. Dan Johns talked about this, right? The calories burn, it's why, you know, high rep ab training, you know, for like, no. Do 5 minutes of heavy ab training and go walk on the treadmill for 40 minutes. That will actually burn calories and will contribute to the deficit. It might actually contribute to fat loss. The goal of weight training on a diet should be to maintain muscle, period.
Yeah.
Everything else should be geared towards creating a sufficient deficit to generate fat loss.
I guess playing devil's advocate, the argument would go, there's this anabolic, catabolic continuum where the more training volume you do, the more toward the anabolic end of the spectrum you end up.
Yeah, I've seen the charts. Yes, I know exactly. It's in Juggernaut. It's in the RP books. Yes, I've seen these dumbass charts that are dreamt up out of nothing. That, oh, something about the ceiling and the base are decreased or increased and something, something. And that's the argument people make. Well, the maintenance studies weren't dieting and you may need more volume to offset the blah, 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 blah. Fine. Study it. Do the work. You can't assume that I'm wrong any more than I can necessarily assume that I'm right. Except in the real world, my way works. Period. I mean, that's just it. It works, right? So yeah, I agree. Maybe it hasn't been studied in, I don't think, not in trained individuals. But it's just like, you have to explain to me why somehow you need more. Because I have seen this argument. Funniest books you'll ever read. Juggernaut Powerlifting Manual. Some of the most ridiculous crap you'll ever see. They argue, number one, you need more volume on a diet. More, not just maintain, more volume. Number two, you need more volume when you're stressed. Number three, you need more volume when you're sick. By that logic, you should need the most weight room volume when you're sick, stressed on a diet.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? The three conditions when you have the worst recovery, they say you need the most volume. That's asinine.
Yeah,
so someone needs
you.
To come up with a good biological explanation for me why you would need maintain and or more volume on a diet, especially in the context of sufficient protein, which goes back to your earlier question.
I think that reductio ad absurdum is a very good argument against raising volume in a deficit.
Like I said, you can maintain. Because, you know,
yeah, the same rationale holds for like stress and sickness as
sure.
well.
And we know the studies have been done. When college students are under higher conditions of stress, they make less gains because we know, God, look at the allostasis model. Look at all of that. The more stress on the body, the less whatever adaptive capacity it has. You cannot do more. Now, again, we can quibble. Can you do the same? That's context. If you're early in a moderate prep, sure, fine, great. When you're late in a deep prep, absolutely not. Because you will break. You will. So.
Excellent. Okay. Yeah. Thank you.